offensive than Mandingo. More shocking than Behind the Green Door. More erotic than Deep Throat.
Hi, this is Irv Katz, and welcome to Dial-A-Dork, the Cleveland radio home for nerds, geeks, and dorks. For the next hour, we'll take your calls about your crashed computer, your hung-up software, your level 17 paladin, or whatever geek-worthy topic you have in mind. Call us at 216-578-1300 and let the Dial-A-Dork community assist you. And now, here's your Cleveland dorks.
I just wanted to say that I'm a nerd.
Y'all ready for this? Welcome to another edition of Dial-A-Dork. Thank you for tuning in this lovely evening. If you're listening on IceCast, it's working now. I guess
always
that's
a good thing.
I guess that's kind of stupid. If they're listening, they know it's working.
It's chill, yo.
All right, thanks. Okay. Anyway, let's just jump right in. Take care of our housekeeping, house cleaning, whatever. We just want to let you know that this week's episode of Dial-A-Dork, which you can contact, by the way, at 216-578-1300, or you can email dorks at dialadork.com, and that's hyphenated, dial-a-dork.com. This week's show is brought to you by Nauticon, N-O-T-A-C-O-N, a.k.a. Not Another Con, being held April 8th through the 10th at the Holiday Inn downtown Lakeside. Or Lakeshore, or whatever it's called. It's not far from the Rock Hall down there on Lakeside between 12th and 9th.
That's exactly correct.
Yeah. Nauticon is the second iteration of a yearly technology, arts, and music event held in Cleveland, Ohio. This year's focus is on how technology and community intermingle. The event itself hosts speakers, events, games, live music, and a whole lot more. So find out more at nauticon.org, N-O-T-A-C-O-N.org, and we will be there. The opening night as part of their IceCast, ironically, to do a special episode of the show, I think, from 8 to 10 p.m. Or you hooked
Friday
that up,
night.
Didn't we?
Yeah,
didn't you, Matt?
Friday night, April 8th, 8 to 10, we'll be rocking the house.
That's right, and we'll be out in person to be exposed as the frauds that we are in front of the entire dork community of Cleveland.
You're not supposed to tell
You're
them
saying
no.
We're broadcasting live from the site of Nauticon?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
I'm so glad I came back.
Exactly. And yes, I am pleased to say that we are joined in the studio tonight by Ty, who did join us a couple of times via phone while you were out doing your R&R thing in the west coast, best coast, whatever you want to call it. And of course, Matt is here.
Hello.
And shortly, Yoko the architect will be joining us. She, like a hero or heroine, ran home and started. She ran home and started the ice cast, which I forgot to do before leaving the house. So kudos to her. Unfortunately, we are not going to be joined this week by Russ Miller, who is
sick.
Is unavailable in a number of ways. One, he's deathly ill. Two, he's somewhere where, well, he's not in the state of Ohio, and he's somewhere with crummy cell phone reception. And if he said if he called from the hotel phone, he might get fired.
When I was a kid, I learned that if I wanted to get out of something, if I made more than one excuse, it was kind of fishy.
All right.
I don't think Russ learned that lesson.
Well, look, I talked to him on the phone about a half hour ago, and he definitely sounded pretty bad. I mean, it could have been an Oscar-worthy performance, but I'm inclined to believe
it.
I got a note from Russ's mom asking me to excuse him from tonight's broadcast.
Well, I can't argue with that.
Okay. We'd also like to thank VisionNet. As usual, VisionNet is our preferred ISP here on the show. They provide network consulting, website development, web hosting, internet connectivity, and VoIP services. For all your technological needs, contact VisionNet at 1-800-645-9351. That's 1-800-645-9351, and they're local. So if you want to keep your money at work here in Cleveland, one thing you could do is call VisionNet. And of course, one other thing you could do is call us here at the show, 216-578-1300, with your geek-worthy question or concern.
And we will be happy to talk you down, answer your questions, reassure you, pat you on the head. Okay, let's just jump right into some topical stuff. Ty, welcome back to the North Coast here.
Thank you, sir. It's nice
and
to be back.
Why don't you tell the rapt listening audience out there, where were you?
Oh, you know, I was taking sort of a slow, ambling, driving tour of the U.S. and a little bit of Canada. I managed to get as far as Vancouver, but not a very direct route. I went via Indiana, Illinois, Missouri, Oklahoma, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, California, Oregon, and Washington State to get there. It was a pretty awesome
trip. That's the
route
you took to Vancouver.
Yeah, it wasn't optimal in distance, but it was optimal in awesome.
What'd you do, miss the right turn at Albuquerque?
How does that make
it
any better?
I love it. That's hello, Pismo Beach. All the clams you can eat. So you had some positively geek-worthy experiences on the way?
I did. Definitely the second half of the trip. The first half was with some people who were trying to move from Cleveland to California at as low cost as possible. So we didn't do anything too adventurous on that one. But the second half was with a friend of mine who was on a business trip. And so we were staying in hotels that needed to have wireless access. And then for my own purposes, I wanted to be able to find coffee shops that had wireless access.
So you did like a Wi-Fi tour of the West Coast.
I probably could have been a lot more exhaustive, but yeah, that is what I did.
So were you a war driving the whole time or what?
Actually, I have this little thing on my keychain. I can pull it out for Irv and Matt to see. The rest of you will have to suffer.
This is just and one more reason that we should probably come up with some sort of webcam solution for the show.
Plus, we're so sexy.
So you can see us all more than 24 hours away from our last shower. All right, what is this device? I mean, it looks like a key fob or something. I mean, it's on my keychain, car alarm.
It detects the signal on the frequency that 802.11b and g, which is the common wireless standards, broadcast on. It's able to distinguish between actual wireless signals and other things that are just on that frequency, and then it has four bars depending on how strong the signal is that it detects. Matt wants to see it.
Now, can you press? It has a little button, so I mean, obviously, you hit the button and it does.
Yeah,
its
you hold
thing.
It down and it kind of wiggles around. And it'll wiggle around, and if it finds a signal, it'll lock in on how many bars of service you have there. And if it doesn't find one, it'll keep wiggling.
Is it best to just hold it still?
Yeah, although if you want to see where the signal's coming from, you can try pointing it. It's directional that way.
Okay. We have no signal in here.
Yeah, I actually figured that out the hard way. Yeah.
What is the hard way?
Yoko has made it. Welcome, Yoko. For all of your fans out there who are worried that you might not be here this week. She's here. Terrific. All right, so tell us. I mean, what can you tell us about some of these coffee shops and these hotels? I mean, how I know that a couple of the hotels I've been in with the wireless service, it's been the reception. I never really get better than like low signal strength, but I mean, it's good enough. It seems to do the job. It's pretty stable.
We had one or two that in practice they would drop out a bit, and my friend needed to be on his VPN, and that would actually reset the VPN connection. So he got a little gray-haired over
that
one.
It is irksome.
It is very irksome. However, we did fairly well, and the way that we did fairly well is we used Expedia. Obviously, you need a connection to begin with to get to Expedia. You can do your research in advance. We always did ours the day before, and would look up places within a certain locale that were in our price range, which narrows it down quite a bit. And then you have to click on each of the ones that are there to see the details about the hotel. You can't search for wireless right off the bat, but when you look at the details, you can see whether it's dial-up internet access or high-speed internet access or high-speed wireless internet access. They're pretty good, Expedia is, about distinguishing between the three.
So what was so important about wireless? I mean, wired is better, especially for VPN traffic.
It can be. We were just enamored with the wireless. We didn't want to have to do anything with that. And for the most part, it worked great.
All right.
Where the places had it. The important thing to check, though, once you've seen that a place on Expedia has this advertised, call them up. Expedia won't have the phone number because they make their money off you booking through them. Go to yp.yahoo.com or a similar set of yellow pages and look up the hotels by name if you need to in that locale, and you can get the phone number, call them up, find out if the rate is the same. Sometimes it's cheaper if you call them up. Sometimes it's cheaper with Expedia, and you can quote them on that. But make sure they have wireless and make sure it's actually free. sometimes you have to pay for it, even though it's advertised as being high-speed wireless access.
Well, I will say that if you are going over to Yahoo anyway, one of the things they do is at maps.yahoo.com, when you put in an address, on the right hand, to the right of the map is a column of things called Smart View, and you can select various things like hotels, gas stations, restaurants, blah, 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 tourist spots, and on the map it will, you know, mark all these little things. And one of the things you can search for is Wi-Fi hotspots. So that's another resource you can use. And I'm looking at my home, and I'm noticing that there aren't a lot of Wi-Fi hotspots around there. I know for a fact that's not true because Tremont has Twi-Fi. And so there's like six or seven Wi-Fi hotspots in and around Tremont that are free.
Is Twi-Fi a local Tremont thing?
Yeah, it's like Tremont Wi-Fi.
Who is that? Who organizes that? Who
has the Tremont Twi-Fi group. I mean, it's actually a small group of Tremont residents that set it up. And it's in a couple of places like the ice cream parlor, Scoops, and it's in Civilization, and a couple of other places, maybe Edison's too.
Cool.
I can't. It's at the library on Jefferson. So yeah, it's really cool.
That's pretty ahead of the curve for this neck of the woods. New York City has it, and some of the Western cities have it, but around Cleveland, that's
no. And it's also at Southside Cafe. I know I've been there many times. You've been there with me, and I've been using my wireless in there.
Yeah, that's right.
Are they all the same SSID and the same access information?
That I don't know.
But you get on automatically,
but
and it's free.
I believe they broadcast the SSID, and it's unencrypted. So you can just kind of show up and sit down and start surfing, I believe. I see people all the time in Civilization now with their laptops. So it's actually really nice.
Well, on the coffee shop topic, that approach is a little different. What I did for that was to look on a site called wififreespot.com, and there are other sites, and depending on what locale you're in, sometimes it's got its own site. You can Google for it. Of course, on this show, we tell you you can Google for anything. It's true, though.
That's pretty much what we do.
In Vancouver, I did better with the Googling than I did with Wi-Fi FreeSpot, but both are good. Wi-Fi FreeSpot is just kind of an index that's slightly out of date, like all indexes are, of which coffee shops and other and a few hotels and a few other establishments have wireless for free in a certain area, and you can go by state or by the name of the establishment, all kinds of things. So I would just go, I'm going to be in Portland the next day, and I pull up the Portland, Oregon webpage and leave that on my laptop. The one thing that I learned, I went to enough coffee shops that I was able to get a statistical sample. I learned that it is worth setting up your computer at a table and making sure you get online before you buy anything. A few times I managed to run into trouble where I had bought myself a trendy coffee beverage and I sat down and I turned it on and I wasn't able to get online. And of course, the people at the coffee shops have no idea what to do about it. They can't fix it. They make coffee.
So in other words, you're saying make sure that all their stuff is working before you're locked in to your $2.50 trendy coffee purchase. Because you're not going to go to the next coffee shop down the street with some other coffee shop's cup of coffee.
Are they that cheap?
Well, you could chug the coffee. And then move down the street.
Yeah, you could. Absolutely. And
I've seen it done.
Just in case anybody...
A friend of mine. I didn't do it.
Oh, yeah. Sure. A friend of yours. Just in case anybody was wondering, by the way, the key device that Ty was talking about is... I don't know if you mentioned this. I probably wasn't listening. The Mobile Edge Wi-Fi Signal Locator. And looks like they have a website, Mobile Edge, and that's with two E's in the middle there, mobileedge.com.
I found that by looking around for reviews of various detectors. I think it was in the vicinity of $30. You can get more expensive ones that will actually display the SSID in a
Yeah, I've actually seen some of those. I think they go about $60, $70 bucks maybe. They're really kind of neato.
They are awesome, and if you're sort of a network technician and you need that kind of thing, it's great. It's a little unwieldy compared to this. The reason I got this one is it seemed like the best price and size. I can actually have it on my keychain in my pocket, and so it's good enough to tell whether it's worth opening my laptop to see if I can get on.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, it's great to have you back.
We're
pleased you survived and didn't get thrown out of too many coffee shops or anything like that. All right, well, why don't we jump into the next topic? There was a big controversy yesterday and today about AOL, specifically AOL Instant Messenger, and there was an article on Slashdot posted that the in the terms of service. Now, is this the general AOL terms of service or the AOL Instant Messenger terms of service? I'm not 100% I think it is the AIM terms of service that basically says that AOL can read anything that you say.
The terms of service, it's a common term. It means that when you sign up for some kind of a software product or a service that you get, it's the jargon, it's the gibberish that you usually skim through and you have to say okay before it lets you use it. So the fact that it's in there, you've kind of implicitly already agreed to it. And some of them, a lot of them in fact, even say you agree by consenting to these terms of service that you'll check back frequently because they're going to change any time. And any changes you implicitly agree to. So this is kind of a stink because they changed the terms and there's something that a lot of people might disagree to.
Right, and there's been quite a bit of a furor over the last couple of days, and I guess a gentleman over at AOL flatly denies that AOL reads any of the person-to-person communications on AIM.
Well, as we were commenting earlier,
yeah.
the vast amount of data.
Yeah.
Flowing through that system would be prohibitive to any kind of we're talking carnivore type systems here.
Well, okay, carnivore systems?
Oh, you know, the whole government reads everybody's email and
what? They don't do that. I've never heard anything about that.
Well, the thing is that this gentleman from AOL also claims that the AIM communication does never even see an AOL hard drive.
Yeah,
it never even gets stored for a moment. It's simply ephemeral. It just goes from
ethereal.
And that's a packet sniffer, which is really funny if you're a big dork.
Thank you, Amitai, for coming
ephemeral.
Through on that one.
Otherwise, it's not.
But we're all big dorks, so that
in this room we are, yeah. But our listeners might not be.
Well, we're turning them into dorks
slowly. It's possible that that's true, and it's possible that that's not true, and we have to trust them. What is true is that it's in memory on the servers, and that I don't think they keep careful track of. It'll get out of memory when enough other messages come in, which probably is very fast, but you don't know. We have to take their word for it.
Well, yeah.
And
this
brings into focus that was true anyway is the communications via a third party. You have to trust the third party.
Or not, and understand that you don't trust them and only say things which you...
Right.
You know, kind of run through your own personal filter.
Well,
Quite frankly, conspiracy theory guys out there are going to say, well, they can scan for keywords or something.
That's exactly what Yoko was wondering is, do they have any little red flag systems that when you're chatting with someone and you say the word, you know, bomb or terrorist or Al-Qaeda or something like that, do they instantly start, you know, tracking or what?
Just like the FCC is right now listening to our broadcast, listening for us to say something indecent.
Are they listening or do they simply react to
same concept
in
terms of what
that,
you're saying?
I mean, if they're listening, they've pretty much doubled our audience.
Thank God.
Do they count in the Arbitron ratings?
Probably
not. I'd be curious
to
know.
But it's the same kind of concept. I mean, yes, theoretically they could. Do they really want to take the time and implement the resources necessary to do something like that? I find it hard to imagine, especially given, and Ty, you might be able to correct me if I'm wrong, but AOL hasn't been posting incredible profits over the last recent years.
I haven't kept track of that. There are a lot of measures you can take, and they range from using different chat services to using encryption, lots of things we can talk about after the break.
Yeah, it says here, AOL does not read your private online communications when you use any of the communication tools offered as AIM products. If, however, you use these tools to disclose information about yourself publicly, for example, in chat rooms or online message boards made available by AIM, other online users may obtain access to any information you provide, including AOL themselves, presumably, and the terms of service specifically state you waive your right to privacy and AOL can make money off of the content you provide.
I mean, quite frankly, I would be more worried about if I were, let's say, chatting at work or something like that. I would be more worried about work reading everything that comes out of my system than I would be about AOL reading something that I had said.
That's a far more statistically likely concern.
Yeah.
I want to be, you know, target marketed.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I want ads that interest me. That's what I'm saying here.
Well, but what if you're talking about something totally off topic?
Whatever. And I got a funny story about it. It happened to someone's TiVo. All right.
I think I've read about those funny stories.
All right, we're going to cut to a break. We'll be back in a minute.
Hi, I'm nobody in particular, and I'd like to ask you a question. Are you dissatisfied with your current IT service provider? And by that I mean, is your computer guy a jerk? Are you paying $100 an hour, $125 or more for IT service? In other words, is your computer guy ripping you off? Does your computer guy leave more problems than he fixes? Essentially, does he know what the heck he's doing? Call the Comm Group today and get the level of service you desire at the price you deserve, with in-home rates as low as $50 an hour and in-office rates as low as $75. That's KOMM Group at 216-556-0141. That's 216-556-0141 or kommgroup.com. Don't be scared. Call the Comm Group.
Hey, where were you last year?
What happened to your hair?
Are you contagious? How come you're always tired?
If you think going back to school is tough for an 8-year-old, imagine doing it while recovering from cancer. CureSearch.org is a website that can help. It connects you to the doctors and scientists whose collaborative research has turned childhood cancer from a nearly incurable disease to one with an overall cure rate of 78%. CureSearch.org. You're not as alone as you feel.
Brought to you by CureSearch and the Ad Council.
Blissfire, flashing the big picture with Diane Hody Bliss.
Hey, we burn the opposition, we fry the spinmeisters, and we scorch the flaming liberals.
It's hot. It's explosive. It's wild. Jump into the fire. Blissfire, Monday through Friday, 5:30 p.m., right here on AM 1300 WERE. Blissfire.
Hearing my voice is brought to you by the Inner Ear, the tympanic membrane, and the ossicles. By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in science, but parents can help make it fun. Visit girlsgotech.org. A message from the Girl Scouts and Ad Council.
Standard Oil, John D. Rockefeller, the Steel Belt, M.A. Hanna, world-class healthcare, biotech and nanotech. The history of Cleveland's entrepreneurs is rich and growing. Capitalism flourishes. Wealth is created. The arts are endowed, and the community thrives. Today's stories are here on WERE 1300, Tuesday mornings from 8 to 9. Join us for Capitalist Cleveland. The crisis is over.
Dr. Feelgood is on the air with the battery-powered M3 Power Razor from Gillette. What's up, caller?
Okay, Doc. I got bumps right now. Truthfully, it's a challenge to put a razor on this face and feel good.
Dr. Feelgood is up to the challenge by telling you that every day you should shave to reduce bumps, and you will feel better. I've got the new Gillette M3 Power. Dr. Feelgood is telling you to shave every day to reduce bumps and feel the power of the world's best shave.
M3 Power Razor from Gillette, the best a man can get.
When you went to Adams, you might have been called a spaz or a dork or a geek.
We know you're not on the phone with a girl, so call us instead at 216-578-1300. And now, back to Dial-A-Dork.
And we're back.
Hey, we're back. How about that?
Good call. This is not the MC.
No, that's fine. That's fine. We were just kind of talking about Instant Messenger, AOL. Are they, aren't they, reading your IM traffic? There's be an awful lot of it to read. But if you
the answer is you're fascinating, and of course they're reading your traffic.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You're so interesting.
They're now, reading your blogs too.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. The thing is that, you know, if they are reading it, they're gonna do their best to make sure that you don't realize that.
Although speaking of which, Apple is reading your blogs.
I suppose that's true since they won that case
they
against
did.
That blogger.
Well, so far it just means that they'll actually. Go to have a hearing of some sort. There hasn't been a ruling in the case yet.
What's the detail on that case?
Evidently, some bloggers, I forget the websites right now, based in California, had posted some what may be called trade secret information.
Was he an ex-employee
regarding,
or something?
Apple. I'm not quite sure. I don't think that's...
Is it significant that they were in California and not like the Harvard student that had thinksecret.com?
It could be.
Ooh.
Ooh. Because California's ruling on the case, that's why it was important that California was where they were at, because if they were in Harvard, then Massachusetts would have to rule on that. Anyway.
Breathe.
Boy, that was random. Woo! Okay. But evidently,
Matt also gives legal advice.
Apple brought a case against the bloggers, and the bloggers wanted to use a defense in California called the Shield Law, which basically says
they want to shield their sources. That's what it is.
Yes, journalists have the protection.
Is blogging journalism?
That's actually.
I can't believe we went there.
Don't go there.
The legal system really went there. Totally went there.
Yeah. Well, and you know, there was an article on Slashdot about a week ago where somebody basically posed the question: is Apple the new Microsoft? They're suing bloggers. The famous lack of interoperability with their iTunes.
How is this new?
Like
Apple's
that.
Been doing this forever.
You're right though. I mean,
they're just more successful at it now.
Well, but it almost killed them initially when they refused to let. They didn't let other people build, Macintosh clones. The only people who could build Apple clones, I think, was that Franklin the Apple II.
I don't know about the clone market, but I know that they had some rather stringent third party vendor terms
IBM PC took over because IBM basically said, you know, here you go. I mean, if you want to make
IBM kind of got their hardware clean room. Reverse engineered by Compaq, if I remember my history right. They didn't mean it for it to be open. Yeah. It just kind of worked out that way.
And then Microsoft stole PC DOS.
Before there was Compaq, there were a number of the Intel based clones, I believe. Like the K Pro, maybe? I don't know.
I don't think that was a PC style
The
computer.
Osborne?
Those were different chipsets. I think they were personal computers, but they weren't IBM style.
Whether they
computers.
Meant to or not, it ended up, being like sort of the VHS versus Beta kind of a thing. It ended up where there were a whole host of other producers of the sort of the IBM PC clone, as they called it, and it ended up taking over the market because they were just so much cheaper and widely available and everything else. So,
Apple has always been secretive. It's almost been their business model. To have something exciting happen and to have a period of buildup over the excitement that people don't know what it's going to be about, but there's going to be something.
Well, I mean, it's,
that's still what's happening today. Like, they don't want to talk about products before they're out. I think that's a lot of what the suit is probably about, is somebody figured out what Apple is going to do next, and Apple has made almost a business of keeping that a secret until they want the world to know.
Right, and that's exactly what happened. Evidently, the code name of the project was called something like Asteroid, and
a new game, I think.
I was hoping. I mean, Asteroids was fantastic, but anyway, the pertinent point here is that the California ruling said that the Shield Law does not apply in this particular case. Okay. So they're actually going to move forward.
Okay.
To have
they're
going to
reveal
whatever
the sources, face contempt of. Court charges if they don't.
That's indeed correct.
All right, shifting gears here real quick. We've got a couple of emails that we'd like to get to. Amy in Avon says, "Dear Dorks," and I just find that so endearing. "How do I know if my company is reading my email, and how often does that happen?"
And dorking.
I would suggest that it happens frequently in companies that have a good centralized mail system.
Bribe your IT guy.
Oh, yeah, I would make good friends with your IT guy for sure. That's just in general. But,
cookies.
I think the big thing to remember there is the chances are that you either are not going to know that they're doing it actively. I mean, it may say something in the employee handbook or some such thing like that. But
I'm pretty sure that almost all of the handbooks say that, company resources a la email infrastructure is for company use, blah, blah, blah. We reserve the right to blah, 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 blah.
Right. And I think she's saying, well, how do I know if they're actually
you won't.
Actively enforcing
you
it?
You should
I don't
assume
think,
that they are.
Just, you should just assume that they are. And, look, the chances are is they're not. Okay. I mean.
Actually, you know what? Let's go a little bit further with this one because. They may be if you're using your company email for personal uses. Now, you could hit the web and do Yahoo Mail or Hotmail
That's
or whatever.
Right.
They're not reading that.
No. How would they?
Well,
they capture packets or
they'd
something?
Yes, they would have to capture the stream and, go through that.
I think it's
hassle.
More trouble than it's worth.
Heck yeah.
Well, a lot of them have web proxies more than they have other kinds of proxies, and they could trap that traffic. And if it's mail.yahoo or hotmail.com, they might take a closer look at that. And who knows, there might be products that decode that into
messages. I have a funny feeling that companies just don't. It's not so much that they're worried about like porn or something like that. I just think that they don't want you doing something that could get them sued.
Right, it's a huge CYA.
Yeah,
you know.
So look, if you're doing something with your email that is just totally not work related and not safe for work,
don't
use your company email. I mean, it couldn't be simpler.
It used to be more complicated when it was harder to get yourself an email account, but these days it is not. Yeah, go get somebody who's sufficiently dorky to give you Gmail or exactly. Hotmail or Yahoo yourself. They're fine and they're free, and then you never have to mix the two up.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I think that pretty much answers that question. Okay. Yoko feels compelled to say something. You ready? Go ahead.
Well, I was just curious. My company also has a policy about using work resources, which I think is absolutely reasonable. But I'm not supposed to check my web-based email at work because I think they're afraid of viruses. Is it really likely that if I'm checking my Yahoo mail at work that I would download a virus? Not that I would ever dream of checking my Yahoo email at work, but if that were to happen, what are the odds of me messing something up?
Well,
if you regularly listen to the show, you would be educated enough to know that you shouldn't download stuff you don't know about, that you should be using an open-source web browser that's a little bit more protected than IE for your web mail browsing. And I have account with,
yes,
does a fantastic job of virus scanning their email.
I was just going to say, a lot of the big email companies are doing kind of pre-scanning of your emails for you. It's becoming, you know, kind of part and parcel of the marketplace. If one's doing it, all the others are going to have to do it.
I would say if you're a bad guy, and they exist, and you were looking to write a virus that were to infiltrate some common situations, you don't write for the weird situations like a dork using Firefox on a Mac. There just isn't the return on investment for that. There aren't enough people using it to infect enough to make it worth your while. But Yahoo from Internet Explorer on Windows is a real popular combination. And so if somebody were to go to the trouble to write something nasty, that's a likely place they'd write it. They would have to get past the Yahoo virus scanning, but assuming there's a way to do it, they hit millions of people.
And I agree that your company probably doesn't want you checking your web-based email. Good luck them trying to stop you, unless they're using a filtering program or functionality of their proxy or something like that that simply doesn't allow you to go to any of the popular mail sites. And if that's the case, then you're kind of SOL.
Well, and quite honestly, that's becoming more and more popular nowadays as, you know, companies are realizing that, God, I hate to say this, the web kind of drains productivity.
Yeah, maybe.
Not that we
little.
Know anything about that.
No. But I couldn't surf all day every day like I do now. So yeah, I can definitely see that. Okay, we've got another email from Greg. Greg's out there, and he sent us an excerpt of a recent incident he had with a sound card, an audio driver, and it was causing a number of crashes, and he did a whole bunch of different things. I mean, he rolled back service packs, he reinstalled XP, he took the card out, put the card back. I mean, he did a whole bunch of stuff, and he keeps getting these sort of memory errors. Instruction could not be referenced at memory such and such address. Memory could not be read. Now, you know, just off the top of my head, I mean, obviously you take the exact text of the error message and you Google it. I mean, that's when you're getting errors, strange errors like this, you Google the exact text of the error message. That's the first thing you do. If the message is very long, pick out a couple of keywords that are unique, especially like some long hexadecimal number that's like part of the error message. You know, look for a couple of word combinations, and that might get you a few more hits. However, at the end he says, my hard drive's kind of old, and I will probably be getting a new hard drive and reinstalling XP, and that'll probably cure it. And I agree. I think you should just go ahead and do that.
Before we pass sentence on this guy, could you give us a couple more details, like what kind of sound card is it?
Well, it's a Creative Labs Audio CT4830SB Live.
Okay.
PCI card.
It's SB Live card. Okay.
So, I mean, what he said was that he uninstalled XP, he removed the audio card. He did Google the error message, and the solutions that were posted didn't solve the problem. He thinks that it might be like some residual bad driver file or something. Boy, hunting down a bad driver file is not a lot of fun.
This never happened before the sound card incident?
Yeah, it doesn't seem that way. It seems to be happening
Does he have onboard audio as well?
Yeah,
is there
actually,
a conflict there?
That's a good question. I think he does have onboard audio, and I suppose he could re-enable that. I think he disabled it in BIOS. I think he could re-enable it and use that instead.
Well, that's certainly
a workaround.
But I think
this other sound card is better, isn't it?
Absolutely better. Amitai is right. The SB Live series of cards from Creative Labs are pretty good. They're very common. Memory issues like this are very often either the IRQ request is getting stepped on by something else. Back in the Windows 95 days, your network was always stepping on your sound card, or your sound card was stepping on your network. Nowadays with XP, it's supposed to, you know, take care of all that. However,
you have a lot more IRQs
since Windows
2000 or something.
You do IRQ sharing now.
Okay.
Which is basically they use one IRQ and share that amongst a bunch of different devices. But
kind of like one at a time, three guys that want to talk a lot.
That never happens.
Interrupt request. Go ahead.
Man, we need a button for that. Anyway, the point is that there is very likely something that is doing a physical conflict with that. XP's typically pretty good about only really, you know, throwing memory errors of this sort when there's actually a conflict.
Yeah, and you know, these can be extraordinarily squirrely problems to solve. And if you are planning to do a reinstall in the near future, I'd say, you know, don't wait. Go ahead and do it. But you got something you want to say?
One thing you can try real quick without doing a reinstall, without purchasing anything, is go to memtest86, I believe it's .org, maybe it's .com.
I'll check
it out. It's a CD image, and you can probably get it for floppies as well. So burn that to CD or floppy, boot it, run it, let it go for a while. If there's problems with your memory, not the hard drive, but with the RAM, that'll turn it up. Most likely.
You know, one other
thing.
You
got the website right. It could be memtest86.com.
One other thing to run, DXDiag, DirectX Diagnostic. It's literally go to your start button, go to run, type in DXDiag, and hit OK. It'll run it. This is a DirectX troubleshooting device. It gives you information about display, audio, network, a whole bunch of good stuff.
I think Greg actually called. The guy with the sound card problem.
Oh my.
So we'll talk to him. We'll talk to him when we get back. We'll be back.
Hi, I'm nobody in particular, and I'd like to ask you a question. Are you dissatisfied with your current IT service provider? And by that I mean, is your computer guy a jerk? Are you paying $100 an hour, $125 or more for IT service? In other words, is your computer guy ripping you off? Does your computer guy leave more problems than he fixes? Essentially, does he know what the heck he's doing? Call the Comm Group today and get the level of service you desire at the price you deserve, with in-home rates as low as $50 an hour and in-office rates as low as $75. That's KOMM Group at 216-556-0141. That's 216-556-0141 or kommgroup.com. Don't be scared. Call the Comm Group.
My mom thinks chat rooms can be so dangerous.
My mom, too. But what do moms know?
Yeah, my mom thinks I'm gonna meet up with some weirdo who's gonna, like, molest me or something.
Moms are so uncool.
Yeah, we're like best friends already. We have so much in common.
Sports, video games, lots of stuff. So why don't we meet up at the arcade? I'll bring lots of change.
Cool.
Let's meet at the food court and wear our baseball caps backwards so we recognize each other. I'm not telling my folks.
Me neither.
Meet me at noon.
McGruff, the crime dog here. When your kids chat online, they have no idea who they're talking to. Warn them that predators surf the internet looking for young victims. Be your kid's safety net on the internet. Tell them to get your permission before entering a chat room or giving out any information. Tell them to never meet anyone without taking you along. For more tips, visit McGruff.org.
An important announcement from the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, and the National Crime Prevention Council.
Every Wednesday at 10 a.m., join Barb Storch on People Power, WERE, 1300 a.m. Barb interviews our area's most influential people from all walks of life. If you want to know what's going on in the greater Cleveland area, then you need to listen to Barb Storch each Wednesday at 10 a.m. here on People Power, WERE, 1300 a.m. WERE, we're the talk of Cleveland.
This is a special birthday for Jimmy, because after waiting 3 years in foster care, he was adopted. Thousands of kids still wait for the love and protection of a family. Think about adopting. You'll enrich a lot of lives, especially yours. For information, call 1-800-ASK-DTFA.
The next time you watch a movie, you may be reaching for a mouse instead of a TV remote. Next week on Report to Consumers, multimedia computers, the newest crop of desktops that look and operate more like a home theater than the beige box under your desk. Plus, reports on ice cream with attitude, a credit score quick fix, and health notes. All this and more next week on Report to Consumers.
Report to Consumers airs weekdays at 5:55 a.m. right here on WERE.
Why do you think you're a dork? I don't think you're a dork.
We know you're not on the phone with a girl, so call us instead at 216-578-1300. And now, back to Dial a Dork.
Okay, we're back. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to talk to Greg in just a second, but before we do, let me just read the announcements real fast, and then we'll hit the home stretch. So we just want to remind you that this week's show is sponsored by Nauticon, Nauticon.org. It's being held April 8th through the 10th at the Holiday Inn downtown on the lake there. And it's the second iteration of yearly technology, arts, music, and... Wait a minute. What did I say? A second iteration of a yearly technology, arts, and music event held in Cleveland. So all you Cleveland dorks, come out to Nauticon. Go to Nauticon.org and get the details, and we will see you there that Friday when we do a special show.
Deep breath.
Every show is special.
And yeah, that's true. We also want to thank VisionNet, our preferred ISP, and you can call them at 1-800-645-9351. That's 1-800-645-9351 for all your technological needs, web hosting, internet, VoIP, all that stuff. And they're local. You don't have to send your money out of Cleveland. Call VisionNet. So we are going to... Well, okay, give us a call, 216-578-1300, or email us at dorks@dialadork.com, and that's hyphenated, dial-a-dork.com. We are now going to go to Greg. Greg is on line one. Greg, are you there?
Yes, I am. How you doing?
All right, how are you?
Good, thanks for asking.
Hey, no problem.
So I saw you read off some of my jumbled documentation. I didn't have a chance to make this as concise as it could have been, but...
Well, I know we butchered it pretty bad, so why don't you set us straight?
Well, you know, this is a new system that I built, and I use a local vendor, and they use a new motherboard, a new case, and it's from MSI, and I wish I had the specs, but I don't. And they're using an MSI video card as well. And the first time that I set up the system, I actually took some old parts from a previous system, like the hard drive I mentioned is old, and mixed it with this new hardware. But it's new RAM, new motherboard, new video. And obviously new power supply as well. And the first time that I got everything set up, it was fine right up until the last few tweaks that I was doing, maybe had a half hour before everything was going to be done, defrag and all. And actually, I got this error a couple of times, and then I blew up the motherboard. It just blew out.
Whoops.
Whoa.
Yeah, and I had to take the motherboard back and get another one.
I mean, did it make a noise? Did it make any smoke or anything?
No, there were no symptoms. This was the only symptom before the motherboard blew. And I don't know if that has no relationship whatsoever, but I don't see anything else related to that motherboard blowing up. So obviously the second time I was much more careful.
All right.
And I went through again and actually, you know, tested out the hardware. I did MemTest 86 Plus.
Amazing.
So, you know, I did my research. I Googled a lot.
Sure.
And I probably spent about an hour and a half troubleshooting this as best as I could with the resources that I had, which was basically just online diagnostics and some things that I brought with me. But basically, I can't get rid of this error. And the only thing that I can see, since the onboard audio obviously is not going to have a problem, Windows is saying uninstall, reinstall the audio. That's pretty much what everybody's saying. But since it's onboard audio and the other audio card is now gone, and I uninstalled the software version of it first before I uninstalled the hardware and cleaned it up, The only thing I can think of is that there's something residual in the registry. That's the only thing I've come
up
with.
You know, actually, I'm wondering, have you ever, this is like what, Windows XP?
Yeah, it's
okay.
XP.
So I think if you use the device manager, you know the device manager, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I believe you can actually change a setting and something like view hidden devices or advanced view or something. I'm checking it right now.
Okay.
But you can actually see like residual hardware installed that haven't been completely removed. I mean,
there's another view in Device Manager?
Well, it's I know what Irv's talking about.
I'm trying to figure out how to turn it on.
Okay.
On Tech Tips the other day, and there is a registry hack you can do that'll allow XP to display.
No, it's in view.
Is it in view?
If you go to, you can right click on my computer and say manage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then in the computer management console, you select device manager, and then under view, it says show hidden devices, and you get a few extra things like some non plug and play drivers, some NT legacy stuff.
Okay.
If you see like an extra sound card or something in there, maybe that's what's causing the problem. That's the only thing
I could think of, because in the original configuration, I installed XP with a clean install on this hard disk, and before I did that, I prepared the hard disk and formatted it, and I installed it with the PCI audio card with the onboard disabled in the BIOS. And when the motherboard blew, the only thing that I could tell in the diagnostics from the motherboard after it had had blown up was that the BIOS had become corrupted right before the motherboard blew up.
Okay.
So I don't know if that gives you any more information.
One of the last things I heard was DIAG.
That's right.
Yeah. In command. Is that something you still think is viable as a diagnostics for this situation?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm a PC gamer myself, and I use that routinely to sort out nasty video driver problems. I generally don't have the sound problems, but it gives you... it lists all the driver files that Windows has registered according to each type of DirectX application, be that video, audio, network, or whatnot, as well as including little test buttons that'll have it play a sound and allow you to hear that, et cetera, et cetera. And you can dial up or down the audio acceleration within Windows as well. It kind of gives you a closer view to the hardware than some of the other Windows views do. And yes, it's a DXDiag. It's actually an executable.
You just run it from the command line?
Well, not from the command line. You run it from the run prompt, start run.
Well, that's the command line.
Well, not really.
Command line is the semantics.
He's right, though.
Greg, try a couple of those things and shoot us an email. And let us know how it goes, and we'll continue to work with you. And if you do, if it does solve the problem or something, then you're obligated to call the show next week and brag about how awesome we are.
And one other thing too,
real quick, go ahead.
If your BIOS gets hosed, it's always a good idea to keep a image lying around when you flash your BIOS, so that you can get back to a known state.
That's
a good point.
This is
actually a pretty good BIOS, and you have the option to save a version of the BIOS settings to your hard disk. So. That's one of the things that was actually kind of concerning me was a BIOS conflict. I thought that at one point I had a BIOS conflict. I did a lot of research on that for this board. So, but again, yeah, this is some good stuff. I appreciate your help.
Oh, you bet.
You're heading me in a direction I wasn't thinking of. So
yeah. So give those things a try. See what you come up with, and let us know. Okay.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
All right.
Again.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Okay. You too. We got another caller, George. You're online too. George, are you there?
Yeah. Thank you. Good evening, gentlemen.
How are you?
Pretty good, and you?
Well, we're doing pretty good. So your computer is what you got?
Here's the thing. I got a Dell, and what's happening is never used to do it. What it does now, it keeps wanting to go online. I'll be doing some, all of a sudden it'll pop up to go online. I went into where you the connections, and I went in and shut it off for maybe 15, 20 minutes or so. Maybe it'll be all right. It won't do it. Then all of a sudden, bang! Here it comes again. And I haven't figured out a way to go in there somewhere and shut that thing to get online.
Are you using Internet Explorer?
Yeah, I have that.
Is that what
I do? Let me. I better tell you this. What I do, I don't go on with Internet Explorer unless it goes on and I don't know it. I just go into where I have a MSN's a logo and hit that, and then I go online.
Is that
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask your internet connection. Is that a modem dial-up connection?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I think that if you next time you dial up, try launching Internet Explorer, and you're familiar with the menu at the top of the window, like File, Edit, View, etc.
Yeah, where the tools and all that.
Yeah, exactly. Under File, there the second to last entry is something that says Work Offline. And I think that sometimes that can get checked. And then when you try to surf, it kind of asks you, hey, what do you want to do? I'm working offline here. And so maybe you could pull that down and see if it's checked. And if it is checked, it's kind of select it again to uncheck it, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
and
I
maybe
know.
That'll,
like, shut it off.
Maybe that might solve the problem. Go ahead.
George, you said this never used to happen?
No, never used to. It just in the last few months started doing that. It's like a pop-up to go online. And I don't want to go online. And I go in and shut it off where the connections are. I shut that off. Don't go online. And then a few, maybe 15 minutes, it pops up again.
Actually, there's a couple of things that could be going on here. There are various programs that will check at intervals for online connectivity. And if your internet settings are such that it says automatically dial a connection, those programs, and some of them are quite legitimate. In fact, antivirus is one of those that will check every now and again to see if you need to connect. That's a possibility. I think Ty had a great possibility as well. Another program, spyware or something, that is trying to initiate an internet connection, and it is hitting your internet settings that say automatically dial, and it's going to come up and say, do you want me to go online? And it's causing you headaches.
That's right.
I remember correctly, you can check that in the tools window for Internet Explorer.
Right.
Is that set to automatically dial?
I go in there, and that ain't checked. If it is, I uncheck it and check it. There's three sentences where the one says, do not go online. I believe that's what it says.
It says never dial a connection.
That's it. You're right. Yeah, and I hit that, and it wasn't too long. It's right back doing it again. So apparently that isn't working, and I haven't figured out how to go in there and get that working.
Do you get charged by the minute for your connection time?
Oh, no.
Okay. I was going to offer a quick suggestion, which is that if you don't need to be online, just for now, you can pull the phone cable out of the back of the computer.
I think it's saying is it's popping up a window asking him if he wants to go online.
Yeah, right. You got it. I'm sorry, I didn't say it right.
No. The thing is, I think that it is there is a program trying to get internet access, and that's what we have to figure out what that program is. I don't know if you can hear the music.
Yeah.
The show's about to end. But what you should do is email us a screenshot of this thing when it happens. So the next time it happens, hit the button probably in the upper right-hand corner of your keyboard that says print screen or PRTSC.
Yeah.
Hit that button and then open up Microsoft Word. You have Word?
Yeah, I have it.
Okay, so open up Word and then just hit paste, and it'll paste a picture of your screen in that and send us that document in the email, and we'll help you out.
Okay. Okay, I'll do.
All right, great. Anyway, that is it for the show, and we are out of here. We will see you next week. Same bat station, same bat channel.
It's a sandbox. Come on.
Nighty night.
Get all those pimps together. It was live.